It's Wednesday, September 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Pope Francis begins his first full day in the United States with a visit to the White House. A VOA reporter describes the reaction by some of his youthful followers.
They feel that his point of views are very progressive and that he's willing to talk about topics that the church hasn't been able to talk until now.
A former Israeli prime minister gives his suggestions for Middle East peace, and we look at the career of singer Nick Jonas. It's all ahead. Pope Francis was warmly welcomed by President Barack Obama to the White House on a beautiful autumn morning here in Washington. Mr. Obama praised the Pope's work to help society.
Here at home and around the world, may our generation heed your call to never remain on the sidelines of this march of living hope. For that great gift of hope, Holy Father, we thank you and welcome you with joy and gratitude to the United States of America.
For his part, the Pope spoke of his concerns about the environment.
Accepting the urgency, it seems clear to me also that climate change is a problem we can no longer be left to a future generation.
Well, as you heard, the president and the Pope were frequently interrupted by applause from 15,000 invited guests on the White House lawn. I'm joined on the line by VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey, who was there for the welcoming ceremony for Pope Francis. President Obama went out of his way to welcome the Pope to the White House. And, you know, he talked about his admiration for the Pope. And it seems like there is a tremendous sort of warm feeling throughout the city for this Pope.
There definitely is. And in terms of the president, the White House, and he himself talked about today his deep admiration and respect for this man and how this man has inspired so many people, not just Catholics, people of all faiths, and not just Americans, but all over the world. And one thing that was really that really struck, I think, everyone here is the fact that both of these men, both of these world leaders, talked about their shared values. If you listen to President Obama, he talked about how the Pope has reminded us to stand up for justice and against inequality, to basically lift up the poor. And this is a value that President Obama has also spoken out against, making sure that social equality and social justice is there for everyone. So this theme of shared values between these two leaders was pretty big. Both leaders talked about protecting religious liberty, protecting the rights of religious minorities. And then one huge theme, obviously, was the fight against climate change. You heard the president say that the Pope reminds us to protect our planet, and the Pope spoke at length about how President Obama's initiative to fight climate change was very encouraging, and that, you know, we should be mindful of the type of world that we leave to future generations. So I think the theme today, in terms of the actual remarks at the arrival ceremony, was focused on the shared values that both of these leaders really possess.
And I thought it was interesting that the Pope began his remarks by identifying himself as a son of an immigrant. And, of course,
that's
immigration
right.
is very controversial, not just in the United States, but around the world at the moment.
Right. I mean, he struck, from the very beginning, he struck a tone of humility. And if he followed that up talking about the importance of tolerance and inclusiveness. And I think that speaks to what not only what's going on in the United States in terms of the immigration issue, which has been going on for years, but obviously worldwide with the crisis in Europe and the people who are basically leaving their homes in the Middle East for a better life. So he talked about that. He talked about being the son of an immigrant, as you said, and of also being inclusive and really being there and showing compassion for those who need help.
The Pope is facing controversy, though, on this visit, because he later today he will be involved in a ceremony canonizing Junipero Serra, who was a Franciscan friar who founded Catholic missions along the coast of California. Now, however, a number of Native Americans are disturbed about this.
Right. I mean, there are, you know, there are certain issues such as this where, you know, he has kind of waded into controversy. And it's not just that issue, but there were also questions about, particularly with President Obama and the Pope, whether they would talk about issues that they don't agree on, such as abortion and same-sex marriage. And the White House has repeatedly said that this is not a visit, and these are not talks that are meant to advance any kind of political agenda. There's not a political angle to this. This is just meant to share the respect and admiration that the Pope has for the American people and the American people have for the Pope. So, I mean, this controversy isn't surprising, but I think it's something that I think people are really trying to stick to what the common values that the Pope has espoused in his visit.
Aru, what was the reaction of the crowd who saw the Pope arrive at the White House?
Well, we've seen so much buildup about this Pope's visit and how he's considered the people's Pope, and you really saw it. There were some 11,000 people, invited guests, on the South Lawn, and they were all there kind of saying the same thing, that this is the most approachable Pope that we've ever had. One woman said, "I'm Catholic, but I'm Catholic more so now because of Pope Francis." They talked a lot about how he speaks out for the underprivileged, and they said he feels the pain of every single human being. We're blessed to have a Pope like him. One woman stood in line, I think, for 6 to 8 hours, and she said it was worth it. It was amazing to hear his words and the way he has lifted up so many communities around the world.
Okay, thank you very much. That's White House correspondent Aru Pandey. A number of admirers of Pope Francis are gathered throughout Washington, D.C., and I'm joined now by VOA's Diana LaGreda. She is in downtown Washington. Diana, what is the atmosphere like around where you are with people, you know, hoping to see the Pope?
Well, right now, Sarah, it's very calm. The Pope just crossed this street, and that was the end of his official agenda in the morning today. People were running, trying to catch up at least 1 second of the Pope's presence, and it was a lot of excitement, people running from all over, trying to get to the main street that were actually blocked, so the Pope cars and the entire crew could drive by. So it was very short, if you think in terms of time, but I think people there were super emotional and very excited.
I'm sure there are a number of Vatican flags about.
There are flags all over, and there are t-shirts, and there are pictures. A lot of people make little pictures and signs for the Pope, and they didn't have a chance to give it to him. It was very crowded, although I talked to a police officer, and they actually were expecting a little more people than what we have today in the morning.
Have you been able to talk to any of the people standing by about what Pope Francis means to them?
Yeah, there is a lot of connection with the new generation, with the youth. I was talking to a few students from Georgetown University, and they feel really connected to this Pope. They feel that his point of views are very progressive, and that he's willing to talk about topics that the church hasn't been able to talk until now. So they feel that there is somebody in the church willing to hear them and to connect with them. And it's really exciting because I arrived at 4 a.m. in the morning, and I was surprised. A lot of people were really young. They looked like high school students or college students. So it's very interesting to see the crowd here.
All right. Well, that is VOA's Diana LaGreda. She's reporting from downtown Washington. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah.
Joining me now in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, what has been the reaction to the Pope's arrival here at the White House here in Washington?
Well, it's been kind of a rock star arrival thus far. I heard somebody say on social media that this is like when the Beatles came to the U.S., and it really is. You know, they call him the rock star Pope or the superstar Pope, and so far he's living up to that hype. In his remarks earlier at the White House, a lot of people noting that he talked about three key issues that they said are going to be maybe the themes as he does this U.S. visit: climate change, poverty, and religious freedom. And so those are the issues that he touched upon, saying that the religious freedom in the U.S. is a precious gift, and a lot of people on social media saying, well, it's true, we should celebrate that. And it's just been, you know, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. Hashtag Pope in D.C. is one of the top worldwide trending topics on Twitter. So a lot of excitement all over for the Pope's first visit to the U.S.
And I think there's a certain amount about his car, about the Fiat that he drives around in.
Exactly. Yeah, the Fiat and the parade around the ellipse. A lot of people talking about the Fiat, talking about the Jeep Wrangler that he goes around in the parade around the ellipse. But he's not doing a limousine or anything, not doing any of these big fancy cars, just a little Fiat is how he's getting around town. And it speaks to kind of how humble he is. A lot of people noting that, saying, of course, he's not going to take a big fancy limousine. This is a guy who lives in a simple apartment at the Vatican, who, when he was cardinal, a lot of people mentioning on social media as well, used to take the bus and ride just on the bus with and talk with regular folks when he was cardinal. So they said, of course, why wouldn't he? And that actually brings up another social media topic. A lot of people wondering if he'll ride the Metro here in D.C. The Metro put out a statement, said, we're ready for the Pope if he'd like to ride. And people saying maybe he should ride because the Metro in D.C. is notoriously bad. There's a lot of delays and issues. And so people are saying maybe it needs some kind of divine intervention. Maybe a blessing from the Pope will fix some of that. So people taking a lot of lighthearted looks at this trip as well. But overall, it's been overwhelmingly positive.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andrew. That is Andrew Palshevsky, our social media editor. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Like the character Pigpen from the Charles Scholes Peanuts cartoon, who had a cloud of dust over his head everywhere he walked, we're each surrounded by our own personal cloud of microbes. Every day, millions of bacteria that live on or in our bodies are released into the air around us. Researchers from the University of Oregon collected samples of air that surrounded 11 test subjects. The researchers sequenced the DNA of bacteria contained within the air samples. They said they were able to identify most of the test subjects by a distinctive combination of microbes that made an individual's microbial cloud unique. The researchers believe that their findings could provide insight and an understanding of the processes behind the spread of contagious disease within buildings or other closed spaces. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about a new single by singer Nick Jonas. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak offered a strategic approach to deal with the security challenges in the Middle East. During a discussion at Harvard University, Barak noted that Israel shares profound common interests with Turkey and many Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, to fight what he called radical Muslim terror and the hegemonic intentions of Iran, including its nuclear aims. International Edition senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi followed the discussion, which entailed his vision of solving the Arab-Israeli conflict. Mohammed, the Obama administration tried so hard to restart the Palestinian-Israeli talks but got nowhere. What's new in Ehud Barak's strategy?
Well, while he is standing in favor of a two-state solution, Ehud Barak believes strongly that it could come through a comprehensive approach to collectively tackle all the security challenges in the region, which he said is going through a geopolitical earthquake.
All the threats are there. But there is good news that Israel is the strongest country 1,000 miles around Jerusalem, from Tripoli in Libya to Tehran, including these two capitals. So Israel, to the best of my judgment, can act out of strength and self-confidence to change the reality. It's a bad reality to have to propose getting into this regional summit or international conference and be ready to discuss issues. Palestinian issue should be the first table because all the neighboring leaders, the moderate autocrats, they agree with us about the priority of the threats of Iran and radical Muslim terror. But they cannot push these common interests to the surface because they are afraid of the response of their own streets.
Ehud Barak acknowledged that without starting with a serious effort to achieve the two-state solution, the regional actors will not cooperate in any of the other issues.
But Israeli leaders ignored the Arab League peace initiative that would exchange full peace for withdrawal of Israeli forces from Arab lands.
Ehud Barak admitted that Israel should have agreed with its own reservations to the initiative because it would gain a lot from entering into peace with the entire Arab world.
When it comes to the Arab world, we have a lot to get. It's recognition, it's participation in major projects, it's smoothing our efforts vis-a-vis the Iranians, and it is the starting point for a long generational process of Israel getting accepted by the region. So we have a lot to get from it, and Israel is much more tolerant to the idea of making daring steps vis-a-vis the Palestinians within the context of a regional agreement. We have to do it.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak said that Israel is strong enough to offer peace and without establishing a viable Palestinian state living in peace next to Israel, it would not be a Jewish state or a democratic state.
Mohammed, thank you for this insight.
Thank you for having me.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Singer Nick Jonas is out with a new single called Levels. It comes off a CD set to be released early next year. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the song and Nick Jonas's career, which started at Disney with his older brothers Kevin and Joe.
They became famous on Disney, working with Demi Lovato. They appeared in the film Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2, and they were the it group until a difference of opinion led to their breakup, and then they went in separate directions. They're from Texas, and originally the group started to be the backup group for brother Joe Jonas, but it ended up being a very pop-oriented band. All the young girls fell in love with what they did. They were on tour with Miley Cyrus. And Nick was dating Miley for a little while. Then he went on to date Selena Gomez. So he's had quite a storied romance, shall we say, in the music business.
And this particular song is the first single off of the new album, is it not?
No, it's the third single.
Is this the third one?
The other two songs are Chains and Jealous.
Okay.
He hasn't released the album yet. He's kind of been tossing ideas about the album around. And he was also thinking about re-releasing his very first album, which, he thought we'd rework some music. I was just watching an interview with him where he said he can't really define his sound. He just kind of knows that this is where he is today, and this is what he's created. And people asked him, what is your sound? He said, I don't know. I do what I do. And it's kind of a mixture of pop and, you know, dance and hip-hop, a little combination of everything.
Devils, 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 get on my elevator. Baby, we're going up. Give me that now and later. I can't get enough.
And speaking of dance, his brother Joe, who you said was they used to be the backup group for, has got his own group, DNCE, which is really a dance-oriented group. That's their sound. They're more into club and electric dance music than Nick. Nick, this is more, it's almost like Justin Bieber's kind of flavor.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe him. I know that the sound that he's created for his latest album is doing very, very well, very popular. Nickelodeon gave him a Kids' Choice Award for Best Male Artist this year, and he's nominated for the MTV Award for Europe in Milan, Italy, coming up for the, it's the Best U.S. Act. So he's in the category of Best U.S. Act.
Wow. That's a pretty big category.
That's a big title.
That is, if he wins that one. And now, you mentioned that he is kind of going more towards a unique sound. He's defined his sound as kind of a mixture of R&B and a little bit of dance and a little bit of pop. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yes. And he does, you know, a great job with what he does. And he seems to have the whole package. In fact, he is now doing a lot of acting stuff. He's on the Scream Queens new TV show. He's going to have a reoccurring role. He was seen on set with long hair and a beard when they were filming his episode this past week, as a matter of fact. He's also got another film, a big screen film coming out called Goat. He appears in that as well. So he's very busy with his acting as well as his music.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about Nick Jonas, you can always ask Larry by sending a tweet to @VOAMusic. Or you can hit him up on Border Crossings, his Facebook page. And if you want to hear Border Crossings, you can tune into our webpage. That's voanews.com. Hey.
That's our show. Remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The loss of government control in countries such as Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iraq, and Nigeria's northeast is one of the factors leading to the emergence of radical and extremist terrorist groups, namely Al-Qaeda affiliates and ISIL. The United States, said U.S. Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism, Tina Cadenow, has stressed the need to diversify its approach to counterterrorism and to partner with other countries. One of the most serious aspects of the terrorist threat is the new phenomenon of foreign terrorist fighters traveling to conflict zones, most prominently Iraq and Syria. Another aspect to the threat is the potential for lone offender attacks by those who have been radicalized but remain in their home countries. Since the conflict in Syria and Iraq began, more than 25,000 foreign terrorist fighters from more than 100 countries have traveled to that region. There are reportedly over 250 Americans who have traveled or attempted to travel to Iraq and Syria to fight with ISIL and Al-Qaeda since 2012. While the numbers are troubling, the global community has mobilized to address the threat more effectively. The U.S. now has information-sharing agreements with over 40 international partners to identify and track the travel of suspected terrorists and is working on others. The U.S. is also encouraging its partners to increase security at their borders to better identify, restrict, and report travel of suspected foreign terrorist fighters. Ultimately, however, said Ambassador Cadenow, we need to do more than identify and stop foreign terrorist fighters from arriving at their destination. We have to prevent them from getting into these pipelines in the first place. To address this, the U.S. is working with partners both inside and outside of the government to increase outreach to youth, women, and victims in order to address the conditions that make communities susceptible to violent extremism. The best way to ultimately defeat terrorist organizations like ISIL is by expanding partnerships, building bilateral and regional capabilities, and promoting rule of law-based approaches to counterterrorism and violent extremism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.